Just a few days, the Catholic cardinals will gather in Rome to begin the process of electing the next pope. Use of the word electing, by the way, is accurate because that's exactly what the process is, an election. And it's also an election process with a very long history attached to it. And the history holds some pretty interesting stories within it. My next guest is here to help us understand this process, appreciate its significance, and maybe even accurately read what its conclusion tells us. He's an associate professor in the Department of Catholic Studies at DePaul University. Professor Scott Marangiello, how are you today, Professor?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And learn more about DePaul University, all the education opportunities that it offers, depaul.edu. To say that this is a historical process, Professor, that would be an understatement. This how engraved in Catholic Church history is the papal conclave?
So it actually dates from about 1274, if you can believe it, where the Pope Gregory the Tenth was the one who decided that the cardinals would get together and elect the new Bishop of Rome. So it's been around for a while.
So talk about the process, because the cardinals, well, most of them are there already. But take us through the process, that initial day. What happens?
So it's going on right now. There's, you know, what we could refer to rightly as an interregnum between one pope and the next. And in that interregnum, all of the cardinals are kind of running the church, the global institution that is the Roman Catholic Church. And actually, kind of right now, there's a series of masses for the deceased pope. So those happen over 9 days. And then in a couple days, the official conclave will begin. Now, in this period, like, as again, kind of today, not all of the cardinals know each other, right? So they're from all around the world. The ones who live in Rome or the ones who are in the same country, you know, they will know each other, of course, but a bishop who's in New York City or Newark or Chicago, a cardinal who's in New York City or Newark or Chicago might well not know a cardinal who's from, you know, a different part of Africa or South America or something like that. So they're kind of getting to know each other now. When the conclave itself starts, they will be taking a series of votes. There's one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And they continue to take these votes until there's a two-thirds majority. And once that two-thirds majority has chosen a pope, the new pope will be chosen. And the two-thirds majority, I'll note, that's from 1621. So 1274, the conclave, the idea of the conclave began, but it wasn't until 621 that the two-thirds majority was required.
So it was a simple majority up to that point. You mentioned that getting to know you period that we're seeing the cardinals go through now. Officially, unofficially, do you think any rib nudging and elbow nudging and campaigning goes on, saying, here's why I think I'd be good for the job?
So I would be very surprised. I'll be honest about this. I would be very surprised if anyone said about himself that he would be good for the job. And I would be very surprised if other people did not say, oh, you know, we should think about so-and-so. Right. So it's not the kind of job, frankly, that most people want. And I think that the cardinal electors are certainly, you know, they're praying. They're trying to figure out what's best for the church. But it's almost certainly, I can say this with some confidence, that, you know, there isn't somebody going around saying, please vote for me. But there are cardinals going around saying, like, you know, I think someone, we should think about so-and-so.
On the same side, too, once, let's just say the first vote, and it's very rare for the first vote to be the final vote. So after that first vote comes and goes, is it just voting, or between votes, is there debate and discussion?
So between votes, cardinals absolutely are talking to each other. There's not like a robust kind of, you know, affirmative and negative. There's not like campaigning. You know, people aren't like presenting their, campaign promises or anything like that. But certainly between votes, you know, let's say the first vote will happen in the morning, and then I think the Cardinals will have a sense of like, oh, well, this person is viable or this person isn't viable, or and things kind of go from there. And then maybe after the second vote, you might see some movement. And the last for both Pope Francis and Pope Benedict the 16th, the conclave was only a couple days for each of those. I think there are only like four or five votes for each of them. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's actually not very long. There have been in the history of papal conclaves, like it's, I mean, this sounds crazy, but it's taken years sometimes. But I would be surprised if this conclave lasted more than 3 days.
I was looking up some of the vote history. The longest one was 2 years. That was in the late 1200s. More recently, much more recently, it was only twice in the 20th century. It took on 5 days. That was 1903 and 1922. Mm-hmm. And in the right. In the here and now, as you said, 2005, 2013, they lasted 2 days. One of the many things I've noticed about the popes, too, and maybe a lot of people, the lay people, might be curious or critical about this, it always seems to be an older person. Is there a reluctance to select a younger pope because maybe the cardinals just don't want a long-serving pope?
Well, it's one of those things, what we mean by young, you know. One issue is, you know, let's say that a kind of typical person in, you know, with good health care can live to about 85 or so. You know, that's not unusual. So somebody who's 60 could be pope for, let's say, 25 years. But usually today, you know, when we talk about people who are 60 years old, we think of them as being like older people. You know, in the U.S., we retire, let's say, 65 or so. So it's also the case that in order to become a bishop in the universal church, you're probably in your late 40s, early 50s before that happens. And then to become a cardinal, you'd have to be older, because usually you're in charge of like a bigger diocese. So again, like New York is an interesting example, Chicago. So all of those, the bishops who were in charge of those three dioceses, for example, were bishops of smaller dioceses before then, right? So you're almost certainly dealing with a kind of a group of people who almost necessarily are like at least in their mid to late 60s, if not older than that. And then, of course, it's a legitimate question. Like, you can't, it's a legitimate question if you'd want to give the job to somebody who is, let's say, 80, because maybe the person wouldn't physically be up to the job, right? So there's a kind of, let's say, 60 to 80, 65 to 75 kind of age range.
It's indirectly a term limit situation.
Well, sort of. It's kind of like, you know, in the U.S., today, right, we pick Supreme Court justices, kind of the younger the better, because, you know, the president and his or her party doesn't know the next shot they'll get. It's not so dissimilar from the Pope, because, you know, and the question is, do you want someone who is going to be around for a while, with offer stability that way, or do you think that, you know, things are fine now, so let's kind of have somebody short and less likely to make big changes? I think it's fair to say the longer someone is holds the office, the more opportunity that person has to make changes. And so maybe the cardinals are in the mood for that, and maybe they're not.
I've been with time, Professor Scott Morangiello, who is Associate Professor in the Department of Catholic Studies at DePaul University, depaul.edu, the website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. One of the fun facts, I guess we'd say, about the papal conclave I saw from British historian, back in 1605, the conclave that elected Paul V included a fist fight between the cardinals, which I don't imagine getting into something like that in the here and now. But in the end result, once the vote is done, the white smoke comes through, is it fair to look at who becomes next pope as either a confirmation of what Pope Francis was doing and installing as a continuation, Or should we look, if it's something different, of look at that as a rejection of what Pope Francis is working for and working toward with the church?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that it's worth noting that Pope Francis has chosen, I think basically two-thirds of the cardinals who will be voting for him, voting for his successor, right? That's just kind of how it works with popes and their successors, right? So I think of it less in terms of continuity versus discontinuity, and more in terms of making big changes versus consolidating the changes that have already been made. So, for example, there's a kind of tradition, and we've seen this over the last few popes. So Pope John XXIII, who was elected in the late 50s, he was the pope famously who began the Second Vatican Council. That was kind of like big, kind of big change pope, right? And then the pope that followed him was Paul VI, and Paul VI was kind of finished the council, right? But he kind of consolidated the changes that Pope John XXIII made. Pope John Paul I was just pope for a month, right? So he doesn't quite fit the mold. But then Pope John Paul II, again, he was one pope for a very long time, and two kind of made big changes. Whereas Pope Benedict XVI, his successor, again, was kind of consolidated things that had already been done. And then with Pope Francis, we had a pope who, again, made big changes, was very well known and beloved throughout the world. My guess is that there won't be any, there would be very, very, very little rejection of anything Pope Francis did because of his, again, because he chose the cardinals. But instead, I think, in the same way that Pope Benedict was a little bit more low-key on the world stage and in the popular imagination than Pope John Paul II was, my guess, and it's just a guess, is that the next pope will be a little bit more low-key and a little bit less on the world stage than Pope Francis was.
It is neat to process with a history that is very entertaining in some ways and very insightful in many more ways as far as to the workings of the Catholic Church. And I hope that for you listening, this conversation will compel you. Spend a little time studying the history. It'll help you make, probably give you a better understanding of what the end result this time around is going to be, or maybe not, because just like with any election, sometimes there is an upset and sometimes a surprise. So that's got the point of interest for a lot of people, a lot of Catholic watchers as well. Learn more about the education opportunities at DePaul University, depaul.edu. He is an associate professor in their Department of Catholic Studies. Professor Scott Marangiello, thanks for helping us understand what is taking place with the Papal Conclave. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.